time for a weekly look at the top news in national politics. The U.S. Senate is getting ready for tomorrow's hearing with Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford, who has accused him of sexual assault. And more allegations against Kavanaugh came out today. Plus, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein's future is still uncertain, and this is all happening with midterm election campaigns in full swing. Astead Herndon is a national politics reporter for the New York Times. He's also a graduate, by the way, of Marquette University. Astead, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the latest on Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and the confirmation process. We have this hearing, as I mentioned, with Christine Blasey Ford, his first accuser. What do we know about how this hearing is going to work, Astead?
Yeah, we have a little bit of an idea of how this is going to go down. First, she would speak, and the actual members of the Judiciary Committee on the Republican side have retained a woman out of Arizona who works with special victims to do their questioning for them. They were very concerned about the optics of an all-male panel questioning Christine Blasey Ford, the Kavanaugh's accuser. So they have decided to kind of outsource that questioning, which is somewhat of a controversial decision. And so this is what we have now. It's going to be an interesting setup, these Republican senators having this woman question the woman bringing forth the allegations. And then after that, you'll have Judge Kavanaugh, who has presented his statement. But then we'll get questions from both the Democratic and Republican senators, who will be free to ask not only about the woman who presented the testimony in front of him, but also the other accusations which have come out since.
Right. We have today a third woman now making allegations about Kavanaugh's past behavior. Julie Swetnick gave a sworn statement that was released through the lawyer Michael Avenatti. What is in this statement?
This statement has some very provocative claims in it. She says there's a woman who is known, is a Washington, D.C. Government experience. She has security clearance. She lays that out. So someone who is presenting this statement with knowing the penalties of what could come if it is false. She has said that she knew Brett Kavanaugh in high school years, that they frequented similar parties, and that he was known to be a kind of loose drunk, a mean drunk that behaved in really vicious ways towards women. And she specifically calls out a couple instances in which she had seen Brett Kavanaugh and his best friend, Mark Judge, who's come up in some other statements, try to disrobe women or try to fondle women against their consent. And then the most provocative claim is she has seen them witnessed them be a part of a group of men who have tried to, in a row, have sex with a woman who was too inebriated to consent. And she says that she herself was one of those women one time, and that Brett Kavanaugh and Mark Judge were present at the time that she was sexually assaulted.
What has the reaction been, especially from the key people in this now, the U.S. Senate? What kind of reactions have we seen to these latest claims?
We've seen Democrats escalate their claims against Brett Kavanaugh. Chuck Schumer, the Democratic minority leader, said that he should resign. There should be a full FBI investigation. That's a little more than what he was calling for previously. What we have not seen is a real response from Republican senators just yet. It's unclear. We've seen some come out on Twitter, Senator Lindsey Graham, saying he has a hard time believing these accusations, saying what type of a person continues just to go to parties where they know people have been sexually assaulted at, trying to demean or smear the claims coming from this woman. But we have not seen a uniform response, especially from the key senators who hold this nomination in the balance. Senators like Lisa Murkowski in Alaska, senators like Susan Collins in Maine, those folks have yet to come out really with these claims. So we don't know exactly how they've played just yet.
And Michael Avenatti is the lawyer who's worked with Julie Swetnick. And you've been kind of watching for this, as you mentioned on Twitter, whether his involvement is getting more attention in some ways than the accusation itself.
Yeah, the president tweeted some claims against Michael Avenatti, saying he's a, quote, third-rate lawyer that is making up accusations against them. It's important to remember a couple things here. You know, no matter how much Michael Avenatti goes on television, it's not him making these claims. It's Julie Swetnick who's doing so under the penalty of perjury. And also, contrary to the president's statement and tweet, Michael Avenatti's and his relation and his work with Stormy Daniels actually did produce legal results. It was that case that saw Michael Cohen admit to campaign finance violations and other schemes that have now that's going to result in him going to prison. So we have kind of a dual thing here. One, the president's trying to distract from the root of the claims because there's this woman, not Michael Avenatti, bringing them. But even if we are looking at Michael Avenatti's past work, they have produced real results.
And the big question then is, are there enough Republican senators who might vote against Brett Kavanaugh if and when that comes to the full Senate? People are watching names like Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Jeff Flake. We don't know. Can't predict the future, but what are you watching for?
It'll be interesting to see tomorrow if there is a really seminal moment that comes from this hearing. Right now, we've had Susan Collins sound a little sympathetic to Brett Kavanaugh, and we've had Senator Murkowski sound a little skeptical. You would need kind of two of those folks to break, because as you remember, a tie could be broken by Vice President Mike Pence. And so you would need all the Democrats to hold, which looks more and more likely. Originally, it was looking like a question of whether some of those red state Democratic senators would actually endorse Judge Kavanaugh, but that's looking less likely. And now we need to look at those senators and see if something happens tomorrow that really breaks public opinion. Right now, these are kind of falling along partisan lines, but we've seen new polling today that says that even GOP women may have really soured on this nomination. I think if that happens, if that is encapsulated in a moment tomorrow where Brett Kavanaugh is unable to answer a question or comes off as callous, if we have something that is replayed over and over, that may force one of those key senators that you mentioned to actually step away from the nomination.
We're talking with Astead Herndon right now, national politics reporter at the New York Times, looking at some of the top news in national politics. We'll pick up the conversation, look at some of the other stories going on in just a few moments. Right now, we pick up our conversation with Astead Herndon, national politics reporter for the New York Times, looking at some of the top news out of Washington. Astead, the big story tomorrow is that hearing we've been talking about in the Senate on the Supreme Court confirmation. Oh, except for the other big story, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein is supposed to meet with the president, apparently to talk about the future of his job after this, I don't know what exactly happened Monday morning, a rumor fest about him quitting, being fired, I don't know. So what do we know about what is and isn't going on tomorrow?
We don't know much. We know that there was some rumor / question whether Rod Rosenstein thought that he was going to be fired or whether he was going to resign or offered to resign to Chief of Staff John Kelly. The reporting from the New York Times says that Rosenstein knew that President Trump was perturbed by the news that came out last week that he may or may not have joked about wiretapping the president or invoking the 25th Amendment. And he was preparing to meet with the president and had gotten a feeling that the president may have wanted to fire him. And so then the rumors started to flow. What we do know is that Rod Rosenstein remains the deputy attorney general right now and remains the overseer of the Mueller probe that President Trump surely once shut down. What we don't know is if that will be true come Thursday afternoon. We will see what happens in this meeting, but there are some things that we know to be true. There is a wing of the Republican Party that is very vocal in its distaste for Rosenstein and Robert Mueller and has been asking President Trump to dismiss one, if not both of them, for months now. We know that that wing is not reflected by the Republican Party as a whole, that there are many Republicans who say that he should keep them in place. But we know that Mitch McConnell and others in Congress have refused to go along with legislation that would protect their jobs even over the president's change of mind. Which one of those factions ends up winning, that remains to be seen.
Right. We've seen a range of things in the House. As you mentioned, there is this wing of the Republican Party. There are members of the House who want to impeach Rod Rosenstein, others who want to subpoena him. Susan Collins, Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine, says she would be worried. She would not be fond of any effort to fire Rosenstein. So there's a lot there. And It seems like this story could change a lot tomorrow, or we could come to Friday and nothing at all has changed.
Exactly. We could have a kind of stalemate here where President Trump knows that the blowback might be so much that he will just keep this deputy attorney general in place, even though all signs point to him being someone who the president's not the fondest of. But it also go the other way. No matter the pronouncements by people like Susan Collins and others, there has not been legislation to protect the deputy attorney general, and the only thing that is keeping him in his job is the president. And so we know that this is a president that changes his mind, one that goes back and forth about decisions. We also know this is a president that has not loved to fire people in person. And so all of these forces are kind of meeting each other in a way that has real big questions for our kind of democratic institutions and structures, but we don't know how it's going to play out.
And finally, all this drama this week is going on with the backdrop of the midterm election campaign getting closer and closer. We're seeing polls lately showing Democratic enthusiasm, preferences for Democrats in races for Congress. It's still early, still a lot of weeks to go, obviously, between now and the election. What are you watching for to gauge whether what we're seeing in the polls now carries over to Election Day?
Yeah, this is what, I'm on the midterms team at the Times. We've been watching this for a couple months now. And what we see here is in the last couple weeks, there has been some late-breaking movement that shows maybe the Democratic enthusiasm is even bigger than we sometimes expect it. We've seen Hispanic voters in key swing districts really break for Democrats in recent polls. We have to see if that holds. But if we have a kind of confluence of factors, if we see some of the suburban voters break against President Trump, if we see increased turnout from young people or minorities, that is what has the makings of the blue wave that people have been talking about. And so as we get closer and closer, some of those signs look more and more likely. But as we know from 2016, you got to wait till Election Day to find out.
Are you and your team there watching Midwestern states like us here in Wisconsin carefully?
Yes, we are. You know, some of the big swing districts are out there. You know, I've been out to Wisconsin, to Paul Ryan's old district, which is one that, you know, lots of folks are watching. And we're also watching the gubernatorial races. You know, Wisconsin and Scott Walker's reelection campaign is really top of mind. You know, the polling hasn't looked good for the Governor Walker there. But again, that's something that can change. And we know that he has fended off real serious challenges before. But those Midwestern states, you have a couple districts in Wisconsin, you have a couple districts in Minnesota, you have some in Ohio, my home state, Illinois, and I think that there are real places there that will be a real bellwether, or especially in states that may have went for President Trump in 2016, if we have seen some erosion of his support.
Ested, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Ested Herndon is a national politics reporter for the New York Times. He was with us for our weekly look at the top news out of Washington.